The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
It's Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers. Taking your calls and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome to the show. It's me, Matt Slick. Listen to Matt Slick Live. If you want, you can give me a call and we can talk about all kinds of stuff. The cults, major religions, atheism, agnosticism, Bible inspiration. So what do you want to call about? We can talk. And the number is 877-207-2276. And so we got no callers waiting, so I'm going to just talk a little bit about some stuff. Hey, just to let you know, we stay on the air by your donations. I don't really ask that very often or mention it. I just don't like to, and I don't. But if you like the show and you want to have it continue in your area and maybe in other areas as well, all you have to do is go to carm.org/donate. And you can put the information in there, and you can donate recurring or one time, whatever. And you can stop it anytime you want. And it really does help us a lot. We like $5, $10 a month, because then it helps us make budgets and things like that. And I'm still researching COVID, and I plan to release an article today, a table comparing it's a low-level comparison between the COVID vaccines that are used here in America and some of the side effects, the money involved with it and stuff like that. And I'm continuing to research. People are really trying to give me a lot of information because this is such an important thing. It's becoming a big deal. And and the reason I'm doing this, COVID, even though I'm a theologian, is because all things are to be held under subjection to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. And this means even what we put into our bodies and what the government does. And so the government's forcing us and trying to force us and et cetera. I want to know why. One of the questions I have is if the issue of our health is for our own good and wear masks and get vaccinated, why is it they're not requiring that of the illegal immigrants they're allowing illegally to flood into our country in the southern border? Why is that? It does not sound like it's an issue of health. It sounds like it's an agenda to do something else. I'll be writing about that too. Anyway, so we talk about all kinds of things here on the show. If you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. Look at the Dave from Salt Lake City. Dave, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you got, man?
But talking about Christians listening to secular music.
Mm-hmm.
Is
it okay to listen to secular music?
Be careful. Yeah.
Well, let's look at different kinds of secular music. What would you say about Bach or Beethoven? I would think, or Mozart. I'd say it's okay to listen to that stuff. It's good. So let's go on the far side, the other issue. What would you say about, grindcore or death metal? Well, I don't think it's very edifying. I don't think it's something Christians should really listen to. So where do you draw the line? Yeah. So where do you draw the line in between? It'd be on the other side of country western. You know, I think that is, I can't believe anybody would like that. That's just my opinion. So the lines, on this side, don't listen to that stuff because it's not good for you. I'm probably offending a lot of people. But then what about hip-hop? What about heavy metal? It's just a difficult thing to answer. What I would say is that you listen to something that's going to edify you, but you can also listen to secular music. Simon and Garfunkel, they were great musicians. What about them? You can listen to them.
Yeah.
And, so where do you draw the line? I don't know. I think it has to do with your personal preferences, your abilities. Even if you like country western, you can listen to that and go to a concert, are they talking about glorifying fornication and adultery and rape and murder?
No.
Then, country western doesn't do that. It's pretty good for the most part. But a lot of the rap stuff does.
Some of the rap music, they got, they're swearing and cussing.
Uh-huh.
And I know.
Yep. And so I would say that is off limits. They shouldn't listen to that. Christians shouldn't listen to it. And then we get another idea. What about listening to Bethel music? It's beautiful music, but yet they teach heresies. Should we listen to that?
Uh-huh.
I would say no. So, it's a tough one. And use your own judgment. I listen to heavy metal because I have 80 decibel ringing in both ears. For 30 years, I've had a super high-pitched tone. And the sound of bass is calming because it's the opposite of what I'm hearing 24/7. And so, you know, it's medicinal in a sense for me. And it is. And I can't stand music that has horns in it because it drives my brain crazy. So people have different reasons for different things. And I think it's a gray area. And got to be careful. Okay?
Okay.
Yep.
I have one more question.
Sure.
Have you heard of the Unity Church?
The Unity Church?
Yeah.
Unity School of Christianity or Unity Church?
Unity Church.
Yeah, that's the second time that's come up. Unity School of Christianity is a non-Christian cult, and I would have to know what particular church it is, but unitychurch.org I'm looking at right now. Oh, yeah. Unity Spiritual Life Center. So I don't know. I don't even know if that's the false stuff.
I'll have to get the exact affiliation and everything, and ask you the next time on that.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it always helps to know what the URL is, and I can go look because a lot of times different churches have the same name.
Yeah. I'll have to look into it more. So I'll ask you next time.
All right,
I'll
sounds
give you
good.
The affiliation. Okay.
Okay,
all
buddy.
Right.
All right.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. All right. Okay, let's get on the air with James from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Matt. I'm Mr. Caller.
You're breaking up a little bit. Let's try it again, okay?
Okay. Long-time listener.
Okay, good. Okay.
You got me, Matt?
Yeah, you said long-time listener and then something else. I couldn't quite follow you, but... So, I don't know what it is about the connection, but that's what it is. So,
first-time caller.
Oh, first-time caller. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you're calling. You know, I appreciate that. So, what do you got?
What I was curious about is I was reading through Revelation in chapter 1 when the seven letters to the seven churches, Jesus says he hates the deeds of the Nicolaitans. And I was trying to figure out what the origin of that was, if it had anything to do with the Gnosticism of the day, if it formulated with Nicholas from Acts 6 when they picked out, you know, some men to take care of other duties and what the apostles were doing.
To be off the top of my head, I don't know. There have been different interpretations about the seven churches, and I think there was something to do with the Nicolaitan. Was it the Nicolaitan? I don't remember, because the seven churches of Revelation, I've been to all the locations. Oh, that's right. No, not Laodicea, Nicolaitans. So I've been to all the churches, and you know, just on a tour out there. I don't know off the top of my head who they represent.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay. I'm going to look for it, though, during the break, and we'll see what we can find.
Okay.
All right, man. Well, God bless. Sorry about that. What's that?
God bless, sir. Have a good evening.
You too. God bless. Hey, folks, if you want to give me a call, four open lines, 877-207-2276. Let's see, turn that off. And let's get to Vicky from Raleigh. Come on. Okay, I can't hit the button. Why is that? Okay, there we go. All right, something popped up. Hey, Vicky, welcome.
Hey,
you're
Matt.
On the air. Hi.
Hey, I have a couple questions. One is back when I was very young, I was raised Baptist, and then when I got married, my husband and I, we went to a Pentecostal church for a while. And there, of course, they taught everything Pentecostal. But anyhow, I did develop a prayer language. It wasn't like I was speaking in tongues like for interpretation. It was just something private for me. But I'm concerned because most of what I hear sounds like if you speak in a different language and you don't understand what you're saying, that it's like like it just doesn't, I don't know that it's scriptural, but it's not like I do it all the time, but sometimes I do. It seems for me, it's more like when I don't know exactly how to pray for something or I feel really deeply about something. But I don't know if it's right to be doing it.
Well, what
and
I would
I
do.
I was wondering scripturally.
Okay. I was going to recommend that you do a slow read and a study of 1 Corinthians 14. Now, there are going to be people who will disagree with me on this. And there's a group called cessationists, and there are degrees of cessationists. And cessationism, to cease, says that all the charismatic gifts have ceased with the completion of the canon. And I don't agree with that. 1 Corinthians 1:7 says we're not to lack any charismata, while we're waiting for the return of Christ. And that goes to other verses about that. But so I believe in all of the charismatic gifts for today. And when you go to 1 Corinthians 14, it talks about revelation, knowledge, prophecy, teaching, and speaking in tongues. And so, can you do that? Can you speak in a tongue? Well, it says in 1 Corinthians 14, let one who speaks in a tongue pray that he may interpret. That's verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 14. Mm-hmm. Well, that's in the church context. What do you do about the issue of you're in your own private, you know, bedroom praying and, you know, you speak in tongues, which I think is possible? The Bible says in 1 Corinthians 13, if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a thudding cymbal. So it talks about tongues of men and even angelic tongues. Now, the cessationists will say it's a hyperbole. They don't really have a communication system, whatever. But I've seen some, I think, pretty ridiculous explanations for trying to get out of this stuff. But nevertheless, so I would say that from what I've seen in Scripture, that in a church context, if they're speaking in tongues, it should be by two or three, and then it should be interpretation. And if there is no interpretation, to keep quiet.
Yes, sir.
If you are in your own private setting and the Lord were to work through you and speak in tongues, and it says your mind is not edified, but your spirit is, then I don't have a problem with that from what I've seen in Scripture. Okay.
Okay. All right. That makes me feel better. Next question. So I think I told you last time I talked to you, Kent Hovind, I haven't listened to the rest of it, but I know he's starting to talk about the day of the Lord and day of the Christ. He's saying they're two different things, or two different days, and I've written the scriptures down. I need to go read them myself because he went through them very quickly. But he also, I know he's coming into, he's going to be saying that the wrath is separate from tribulation. So he does say that Christians go through tribulation, you know, but then after that is when the wrath comes, and he's saying we get raptured before the wrath.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere in scriptures that it says that there's a tribulation and then wrath, like two separate things?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, I say that, when I say not that I'm aware of, because I don't have an exhaustive knowledge of those topics. I've studied them. But sometimes there are people who just have a better knowledge, and if they were to contact me and say, look at this, look at that, and they convince me, then okay, fine. But from what I've seen, there's only one return of Christ, this age and the age to come, one rapture, and the wicked are taken first. And the pre-wrath idea, we'll get to it a little bit after the break, okay? We'll talk a little bit more about this, okay? Because it's a good topic. All right? So, hey, folks, please hold on. We'll be right back after these messages. We have no open lines right now. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Let's get back on the air with Vicki from Raleigh, North Carolina. Vicki, you're still there?
Yep.
All right.
I'm here.
So, you're asking about the pre-wrath view, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see it as being biblical. From what I understand about it, it teaches that there's a seven-year tribulation, and then halfway through the tribulation is when the Antichrist is revealed. Then there's a bad period of time, and then halfway between the revelation of the Antichrist and the the return of Christ, halfway between that, is when the rapture occurs. It's like three quarters of the way through the tribulation period, and then the people are caught up there. And the reason is because they say that God has not destined us for wrath, but for obtaining salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, 1 Thessalonians 5:9. And the problem with citing that verse and verses like it is it's just out of context. Hasn't destined us for wrath, but salvation. Salvation has to do with eternal salvation and wrath, eternal judgment. Right. And so it's a misapplication of the verse. And so I don't see the pre-wrath as being biblical. That's just my opinion. So there you go. Okay.
The wrath is separate from the tribulation.
Well, okay. There is the tribulation period. Okay. Some people will define wrath differently than what the Bible does in certain contexts, and then it will be in harmony with other contexts. The word wrath can mean the wrath of a king and the wrath of God. But when the Lord is using it, it's particularly when it's juxtaposed to the issue of salvation, it means damnation. The wrath of God comes upon the unbelievers, and that'll be eternal damnation. Mm-hmm. But the wrath of God can also come upon those who are still alive, and he can judge them. And we see that kind of thing codified or written down in the imprecatory Psalms, where the psalmist says, God, go get them, you know, punish them, destroy them. Mm-hmm. And so there's different levels of what it is. So when they say pre-wrath, the general idea is that we don't experience the wrath of God, and it's the wrath of God upon the earth. Well, the word wrath there can change its meaning in what they're saying. We don't experience the wrath of God. Well, I would say, what does that mean for Christians not to experience the wrath of God? That's the question that has to be answered. And the way to find it, to find out the answer, is to look at the word wrath, which is orge, all right? And then it's the number 3709, and I can just go in here, my little Greek thing, right? 3709. And I can find out that it occurs 36 times in the Bible. And wow. I could look at exactly what it means in every context and see, you know, there are times when it says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you. Well, that wrath just means a kind of a vengeful anger that you take on people.
Yes.
And then therefore it is necessary to be in subjection not only because of wrath, but also because of conscience sake. That's Romans 13. And that has to do with the judgment of the state. So it has different meanings in different contexts. When we talk about the wrath of God, then we have to deal with that issue. And so then I could do a search and stuff like that, and you find, and this is what they need to do, but I don't see them doing that. I don't see them doing those kind of studies where they find out what the word means in the related contexts and stuff like that. That makes sense.
Okay. You have people waiting?
Oh, yeah. We got full phones.
Okay. I'll get back in line then because I have two more questions. I'll get back in line.
All right. Sounds good. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's get to, let's see, that would be Cheryl from Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can. So what do you got?
Okay, great. I was in my car driving with the Bluetooth. So I got a question/comment on the COVID. Mm-hmm. I'm a registered nurse of over 40 years, and so I do have some scientific knowledge. Anyhow, I even see doctors kind of taking sides on the mask or not mask and the vaccine, not vaccine. However, I have personal experience with just even regular the flu vaccine. I can go into that later. I'll just tackle it now. My dad actually had Parkinson's, and what I'm not hearing mentioned anywhere is that people with neurological diseases should never have a vaccine. And it destroys, it totally destroys their immune protection system. And myself, I know what it feels like. I don't have any diagnosed disease, other neurological disease, other than I do have, you know, long history of allergies, asthma, mm-hmm. But other than DNA, you know, genetics from,
right,
you know, from parents, whatever. But my dad was given one by mistake by the doctor's office, and they admitted it was a mistake. And it literally, he had pneumonia after pneumonia. He was aged. He was over, he was about 90, or was 90.
Was it the COVID vaccine that he took, that was given to him? Or flu?
No, it was actually a flu, flu, regular flu vaccine. And it basically, you know, was the end of his life. They could have, they could have put a feeding tube in him, but that's not how he wants to live. Anyway, that's a background. Also, I felt when I was on the flu shot, and they tried to force him because respiratory, being a nurse, ER, all that. But I could feel for 9 months after I got the shot, like a rough rag being pulled out of my lungs continuously, 24/7 for 9 months. I know what death feels like. And, but anyhow, so I don't hear that being mentioned with the neurological problem issues and causing immunosuppression. My big question is, why aren't people demanding that those that got the vaccines are being tested for proof of effectiveness? Let me tell you something. May I speed this? I'm not saying that right. But there is a hospital in northern Indiana, and I cannot name it because I don't want to get my sources in trouble. But they are hiding this information. But the first 6 months that everybody that got the two-step vaccination, the first 6 months of people, none of them showed antibodies to COVID after the shot.
Really?
And that is a fact. And now, to give you the fact on paper, I wouldn't probably be able to get it at this point. But no one's asking this question. Doctors aren't asking this question. And it, as you can tell, it's very logistic.
Right.
And reasonable. You know, we should assume we've taken a vaccine, we're going to be protected. But nobody's checking if they're being protected. It's an RNA derivative. You know, I'm not going to go into all that. I can't even explain. But as far as protection and producing antibodies for COVID, and there's so many factual reports on that, the vaccines are spreading it. As much as whatever, I'm not going to agree or disagree, or equal to.
Can you hold on?
Okay.
We have a break, okay?
Yeah.
And the research I've done is confirming what you're saying. I have it on my website, too. But I'll be right back, folks, right after these messages with Cheryl. She's a registered nurse talking about COVID. It'll be interesting when we get right back. Please stay tuned.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Let's get back on the phone with Cheryl from Greensboro. Okay, Cheryl, welcome back. Go ahead.
Hello, Reverend Matt. Is it Matt?
Yep, that's right.
So okay, sorry I don't get to hear you your full show too much. But anyway, that's pretty much it. I mean, we really do need to be demanding proof of effectiveness with that, those vaccines.
Well, yesterday I released an article on my website, carm.org, and I released an article the day before. The day before, it was total cases of COVID per 1 million population. And yesterday, I released information I got, COVID vaccines effectiveness and percentages of deaths in a population. And I just noticed that the page is a little messed up. I got to clear the cache. But the issue is that it looks like the more the vaccines are in the culture, the more deaths there are. And
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, but here's the thing is, you know, is it because, you got to put this information in proper perspective, is it because they have more vaccinations per certain areas because there's more deaths, or is it reversed? And that's the question. I actually write about that in one of the articles, or both of the articles. You know, the scientists need to do the research on that. But I have this information, and I gathered it from unrelated sources, and I document where I get it from, and I did it just in an Excel spreadsheet and a graph, and you find out that, like Molly, it has the fewest basic cases. Let's see if I can find the information. Here we go. And, and 26 cases per 1 million of deaths. 26 deaths per 1 million from Mali. Ethiopia, it's 43. And Mali has 41% vaccinated. Ethiopia, 0.41. Less than 1%, less than 0.5% of the population in Mali are vaccinated. Same thing with Ethiopia. Same thing with Sierra Leone. And there's in Afghanistan, 1.08% of the population is vaccinated, and 180 deaths. In Taiwan, 4.42, it's 35 deaths. When you get to Brazil, 33% are vaccinated, there's 2,746 deaths. In Belgium, it's 71% vaccinated, it's 2,187 deaths. So, total deaths. So it's like, well, what's going on? What's going on? Generally, right. The more vaccines there are, the more deaths there are. But that's not to say that they're causing the deaths. It could, like I said, it could be because of the corollary effect. But, you know, this is just something that the scientists need to go look into. But I don't trust them. I don't trust them anymore.
Right. Also, there were children. There were children studies done on children that got the vaccines, and almost like a huge percentage, I'm not going to quote a number, but a big percentage of the children developed almost immediately inflammation of the heart. So in relation to, that's another point. Now, regarding the mask, I really want to speak up for the non-mask wearers, because nobody's saying anything about the probability of low oxygen ischemic heart attack from the mask. Mm-hmm. And I also have people with breathing disorders, asthma, who's going to be able to tell in the next 4 years how many people are going to die prematurely from being robbed of oxygen?
And you know about the immunity debt. You know what that is, right?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Immunity debt is that a population gets exposed to a certain number of viruses, bacteria, etc., during a normal year. And so the overall population has an immunity relationship with all the new stuff. If you use distancing and masks and all these hygienic things, those other viruses are still out there. You just get exposed to them less, and so the immune system in the human body is less strong. And so when something strong does come along later, the body's less prepared to tackle it. It's called immunity debt, and it's a big concern, because it can lead to a major pandemic that is caused, inadvertently caused, unintentionally caused, by the practices of trying to stop a present problem. It's called immunity debt. I learned all about that. And
that's awesome. Here. I love the knowledge and the research you've put into it.
Oh, I've done a lot. And here's the thing. The cloth masks miss 97% of the COVID vaccine virus viruses that go through the mask. It's only 3% effective. The surgical masks are at best 47% effective. The COVID-95 masks, if anybody's going to be wearing them, that's what you should be wearing. That's 95% efficient. Well, that makes more sense. So people are wearing the cloth masks with 3% effectiveness, going around as though they're okay. But it's a false sense of security. And cloth masks are by far the most dominant mask. Well, I don't know. I've seen about half and half here in Idaho. So there are problems. There are problems.
I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
Just with the reasonableness of wearing a mask with a patient for 8, 10 hours, 12 hours, come on. I don't care if you have 10 masks on. The air's going to get in there, and there's going to be exchange, mm-hmm, both ways. And it's just, to me, it's just ridiculous to believe that it's going to really be effective.
That's right. In fact, the masks have to be worn a certain way. And they've even, with cloth masks, those surgical masks, where if you just put it straight from underneath your nose, the loop straight over your ear, versus crossing the loop over your ears. Crossing the loop raises the effectiveness pretty significantly, like from 40 to 55 or 60% effectiveness in the surgical mask.
Great.
But it's still... And you know, it's like, why are they pushing this stuff? And then there's reports of people having ill effects because of wearing masks. Now, I can understand you're a surgeon, you're a nurse, you don't want to get exposed. I used to work in a hospital, and as a runner, a transport, and I also worked in emergency, registering patients. I was exposed to a lot of stuff. And I could see wearing a mask, you know, in certain situations. I went into a room once with a person who had spinal meningitis. And, you know, but, you know, doctor said not contagious. So, you know, the thing is, you got to take precautions. But this imposition of the masks upon everybody in society seems to me to be, it's what I call a control marker. Cults have them. And like in Mormonism, for example, you dress a certain way, you speak a certain way, you don't do certain things, you do certain things, and they watch you to see if you're conforming to the markers. And a mask is a control marker. It is.
Exactly. I'm in total agreement. I think really, in some ways, I think it's just really not experimental, but a trial run before... You know, the mark of the beast in essence, that's where the world is going to, of course. Is, you know, it's all preparatory. It's going to get worse. But the reasonableness of the mask, and I've worked in surgery rooms and you know, doing spinal procedures. And so, you know, you have to wear a mask short term. But let me tell you, it's hard to wear one for 15 minutes is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they make high school students and some college students wear them while they're running, jogging. It's insane.
I know it.
It's insane. And if it's ridiculous. If the health of the population in America is really what they really are after, then why is it that they're promoting illegally the illegals coming in the southern border against the law, and they're not supposed to be vaccinated? And that's okay. And then they ship them out to conservative states.
Exactly.
You know about that? What is going on?
If they really care about us.
They don't care.
Yeah, if they really care, and that's the whole point. They don't. They want America to become a third world country for whatever reason, socialism take over, well, whoever, the world order. But I had more to say, but you just cover so much ground. There's so much that can be said. And really... What can we do?
Well, I've got some ideas. But we need to resist, and we need to stand up, and the Christians need to pray. And I think that what I believe is happening, or I suspect strongly is what's happening, is that God is allowing this to occur because the Christian church has sat down and done nothing. It hasn't done its job, and it's not doing its job. And so the persecution is coming to the Christian church, and the Christians will finally start to wake up. And this is unfortunately what happens.
I agree.
So,
I agree.
And,
there's one more thing I do want to say.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, so as a nurse, now I've had allergy sinus problems for years and years. I was six to nine months out of the year until I use my own head. I found out colloidal silver is used as an antibiotic, and so we don't drink it. You sniff it in your nose.
I've heard that.
I hear a commercial.
Yeah, there is a commercial. And also other stuff.
Works.
You should email me, and you should email me at info@carm.org. Okay, we'll talk. carm.org. info@carm.org is my website. We gotta go. All right. God bless, Cheryl. Thanks a lot. Hey, folks. We'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's get to Tommy from Raleigh, North Carolina. Tommy, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. Nice to hear from you, Pastor. How you doing today?
Doing all right, by God's grace, man. Doing all right. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a, I'm a Walmart truck driver, and I listen to you all the time, and I deliver to all the Walmart Supercenter, and then I does ministry. I don't have a lot because you summed most when you was on the call on the phone with the last caller. You summed it up just at the very end about the Lord Himself. But this is what I'm gonna say. My sister-in-law had breast cancer, and my wife had ovarian cancer, and so we spoke with the oncologist, and I had to take her from Duke, North Carolina, to Atlanta, Georgia. So the cancer had spread it. So after she had surgery in February, my sister-in-law died. So the doctor actually told my sister-in-law, my brother, that they was kidding my sister-in-law, and they did. But oh well, she's gone. But anyway, what I'm saying is, me and my wife both, we did take the COVID shot. But what we did, we discussed that with the our primary care doctor and the oncologist. And I had allergies last year and this year real bad, real bad. I would wake up and couldn't breathe. So I'm doing good. So I'll say this to help people. Talk to your medical doctors and do you, because like you said, all this is because the Christians are not doing their job, and it ain't nothing but a plague, but it's going to pass. That's all I got to say. It's going to pass.
Okay, well, appreciate it, brother. All right. hope you feel better. All right, let's get to, let's see, Bruce from Winston-Salem, and we lost Bruce. Now, next longest waiting is Doug from Salt Lake City. We lost Doug, and they're dropping like flies. Let's see, Vicki from Raleigh, North Carolina. Vicki, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, okay, hey. So my next two questions. Mm-hmm. I heard in one of your things, I don't know if it's recently. Hello? Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I do. I hear you.
Uh-huh. I don't know if it, but anyhow, where you had told somebody that called in, you said the NIV was not good. And that's what my brother got me after I started listening to you. And I told him I wanted to start reading the Bible. And I didn't know where your old one was. So he bought me an NIV and this other study Bible and stuff. And then I heard you tell someone.
Well, it's okay. It's not good for some things, and it's better for others. It's a more of a loose translation. And I would not use it for apologetics. In fact, some of the professors in seminary use the NIV. So it can't be bad. And I wouldn't say it's bad. It's just that I want something more precise to the original language, because I want to know what's really happening. And not just a semi-translation that's kind of an interpretation a little bit, which is the NIV really kind of is. But in some areas, it's very good. So I would say if you're going to get three Bibles, I say three Bibles. NIV is good, the NASB, and the King James. And between those, you go through any comparisons between verses, and you can see the overall what's going on. But if you got the NIV.
The King James, you said, is the last one.
Yeah, King James is, you know, it's an oldie but goldie. And the NASB, which is more literal, and either the ESV or the NIV. I would recommend the ESV over the NIV, but... that's it, you know. There you go.
Okay, and then one last question. I do a lot of my reading on, like, Kindle and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any apps or that you would recommend that you could either look at on your computer or on your Kindle, maybe?
For what?
Like, for reading the Bible that you're aware of that are good ones?
I just use my NASB and everything, and I have it on my phone, and... So I don't really do devotional reading on my phone. I study so much all the time that I'm always in the Word. That's how I get fed. But, you know, I don't know. There's something called eSword, which you can get. It's free. It's for your desktop. I don't know if it's on the phone also. But it's E-S-W-O-R-D or
e-sword.com
or .org. And, that's,
okay, I can get that on Kindle, okay.
No, that's not a Kindle thing. It's a program. But as far as a Bible goes, you can get the NASB on a Kindle. And you can get it NIV and the ESV, I'm pretty sure, on Kindle. And that's fine.
Okay, just get the basic one. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all I have to disturb you today.
Okay, no problem at all.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. God bless. All right. Let's get to Garrett from North Carolina. Garrett, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey there, Matt. I'm glad to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for calling. So what do you got?
Well, I just hopefully had a quick question. I'm not a very political person, although I do tend to be a little bit more conservative. And, of course, the vaccine issue is kind of a big one that has split my family for the most part.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you biblically, my understanding is that, so I've gotten the vaccine. My understanding is that Jesus in the New Testament set the expectation that our obligation as Christians is to obey the government in whatever, you know, authority that they have, short of them commanding us to sin against God.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, again, I'm not trying to be political, but wouldn't that make the obligation of Christians to obey the government and get the vaccine?
To some degree, but we're also to resist ungodly leaders, as Acts 5:29 says. And so we have ungodly leaders. Now, when they say that the vaccine is what they want us to have in order to buy and sell, obviously there's some problems there. And we don't want to submit to that kind of oppression, because that kind of oppression leads to more oppression. The more you lay down, the more they will walk all over you. And so we have to think in terms of the greater good. Now, if you're taking the vaccine, okay, that's fine. But biblically speaking, we are to resist ungodly leaders, and we're supposed to obey God rather than men. And Romans 13 is often taken to mean just do whatever they say. The government says that's not it. That's not the case. So we have to understand, for example, here's another thing. The Bible actually, governmentally speaking, the Bible actually teaches capitalism, private property, and right of self-defense, mm-hmm. and representation mm-hmm. by your peers. Yet our government is pushing socialism and Marxism. So they are going mm-hmm. against the scriptures. So now what do? Well, we got to resist. And so where do we draw that line? It becomes difficult. Go ahead.
That was actually going to be my next question. How do you, you know, as an individual Christian living out your life, how do you know where and when to draw that line as a small battle that isn't leading into Marxism between, you know, an actual move that you should resist because it is leading into unbiblical leadership of the country?
You both. And you got to be careful. Well, that's why I'm providing the research on CARM, on COVID, also on governmental issues, and they're becoming more and more interrelated. I had to go back to the government section and add some more information. But you know, I have the privilege of being able to sit home and work all day on this and research, and I enjoy doing it, so that's just me. And I provide that information with documentation so that people can make their own choices. If people want to get the COVID vaccine, get the COVID vaccine. If you don't want to, then don't. But the government doesn't have the right to force it on you. And when the government says it's for your own good, that's when you got to be careful. Whenever a government says this is for your own good, that's usually a very serious warning sign.
And oh, so, yeah, absolutely. And that's the difficulty is, you know, whenever the government tells me to do something like that, I have the tendency to believe that they are trying to, you know, control me, essentially. Yep. In an unjust way, but I had a hard time reconciling that with the precedent that Christ made of, you know, obey your government. Would you mind providing me with the scriptural references of the scripture that mentions to resist ungodly leaders?
Sure, Acts 5:29. What you can do is go to CARM and just type in a Christian's duty to obey and disobey government. Christian's duty, okay. Obey, disobey government. And you'll see the article that's there. And it goes through the Jewish midwives, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. It goes through disobey the king in order to seize Paul. So, you know, there are gray areas, of course. Now, here's the thing. If the government says, we absolutely know that the vaccine is killing millions of people, here, take this vaccine. I could see that if it is, but it's not. Something like 98% of people get infected, nothing really happens to them. But here's my question. Mm-hmm. If it's for our good, then why is it they're opening up the southern border and letting illegals flood into our country without the same requirements they put on us? That hypocrisy and that inconsistency then tells us we can't trust them. And we can't.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this. Natural immunity is 13 times better than the vaccine. 13 times. And there are more and more accounts of people who have been vaccinated who are getting sick with COVID. It's increasing. So when you start having this information, then it becomes an issue of, or when does it become an issue of self-defense? Because we have the right of self-defense. So if the government wants to force
I guess that makes sense.
Us,
Yeah. The self-defense argument, I didn't even consider that because, I mean, to some degree, it's probably a fallacy, but I got to the point of, you know, having the opinion that, you know, the Bible, you know, tells me to obey the government, and if the government decides they want to do population control and eliminate me, that's, you know, so be it. I'm going to heaven. But I suppose that would make sense that that would be a case of self-defense that we should stand up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We, as Christians, we have to understand that to do nothing is to promote evil. The Christian church has sat on its hands for decades and not really done what it needs to do. And if I were to ask Christians, what's the obligation that we have as Christians? I'll ask a question right now. No one has to answer me because most people won't get it. What's our obligation as Christians? What's the, like, maybe even one of the number one? You could do 1, 2, 3. There's probably a variation. But it's to make disciples of all nations, to go out and evangelize and witness. This is what Jesus commanded us to do. He also said, pick up your cross daily and follow after me. These are not things like, you know, get a nice car and a nice bank account and relax and go to church on Sundays. And that's what we're called to do as Christians. Quite the opposite. And it's a shame that in our comfortable Christian culture here in America, that the atrophy has occurred and taken us over because we're not being stretched. Well, now we're being stretched, and more, and people are going to be going to jail for being Christians. I'm waiting to get arrested. I am. I'm just looking at my door. Hey, you something
broke? I suppose you would be the first of us.
Well, I'll be up there, you know. And I've been swatted before. I've been followed. I've had threats of varying kinds come to me. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen? But I have to speak out, and I'm going to continue to speak out because it's what needs to be done. And I think it's 1 Corinthians 16:13. Jesus says, or the Paul says, act like men. He says, you know, be strong. Act like men. And in my opinion, the reason things are going so bad is because men aren't doing their jobs in the Christian church. That's my opinion.
Or in society. I mean, that's definitely a scourge on our society, is that men don't really exist anymore. But that's a whole other conversation.
I love talking about that. They've been wussified because men are under attack in media and sitcoms and movies. You're either if you're a man, you're incompetent, or you're a murderer, you're a white supremacist oppressive person, or you've got to be, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, you know, kicking rear all over the place. And the guys who just go home, they work hard, they take care of their families, ridiculed. And they don't even know how to be married.
They're ashamed for it.
Yeah, maybe they feel ashamed for it. And there's stuff that's happening to women too, but it's a big problem. And, we've got to go. It's Friday.
That's okay.
Sorry about
that.
Thank
you, Matt.
All right, buddy. God bless. Hey, folks, I hope you have a great weekend. Wow. And by His grace, Lord willing, we're back on the air on Monday, and we'll talk to you then. God bless. See ya. Bye.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.